Hey girl, welcome to the Empower Her podcast, where we are all about taking purpose-driven action toward building lives we really freaking love. My name's Keisha, and I'm an entrepreneur obsessed with giving you actual tools to help take you from where you are now to where you want to go in your life, career, and relationships. And this podcast, it's all about real talk and having some fun as we share incredible stories, tips, and tricks to help us get out of our own way and unapologetically make some moves. So girlfriend, let's do the damn thing. Girl, I am so excited that you're here for today's episode because we have on the show one of my favorite guests. He was actually on episode number 3, the first ever guy on the show. His name is Dave Hollis. And what's so cool about having him on episode number 3 and now all the way 300 episodes later is so much has happened. If you're not familiar with his story, he is a New York Times bestselling author. He's the host of the Rise Together podcast. He's a keynote speaker, life and business coach. But what's so interesting is all the twists and turns that he's taken along the way. He used to be the president of sales and distribution at the Walt Disney Company. Then he left that job to come in and build the Hollis Company with his wife, Rachel Hollis. Fast forward, they actually got divorced. And he's navigated a whole lot of twists and turns and pivots that he so vulnerably shares in this episode. There's actually a point in this episode where he tears up because he's just so honest and raw. I think you're really going to connect with how he talks about courage and identity and transitions and really figuring out who you are, what you're passionate about, and how to navigate uncharted waters. So without further ado, we're going to dive right into today's episode with Dave Hollis. Dave, I am so excited to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Keisha. I'm excited to be back. Repeat guest.
Repeat guest, and it's been 300 episodes since you were on.
That's so unbelievable. You are a prolific producer of content, 300 episodes. Goodness gracious.
So what I'm really excited about is how much has changed and how many pivots and transitions we've both gone through, but we're going to talk about you today. I talk about myself enough on the podcast. So I want to hear kind of just how, first and foremost, you support yourself through all of this change, because I talked to you back like 6 months after you have left your role at Disney. So to say that you're like living in a completely different world now is kind of an understatement, right? So let's talk about how are you supporting yourself when you're going through seasons of change, like from an overarching, or if you want to give specific examples, because you've navigated a hell of a lot in the last couple of years here.
Right on. So yes, a lot of change. Change has in my life in the last 5 years been a constant. I expect that it will not be over, as much as I might like to not have change happen as often as it feels like it does. There are certainly things in these last 5-6 years where I have been the provocateur, the person who chose change. Other times when change chose me, doesn't matter if you choose it or if it chooses you. Getting acclimated to what your new normal will feel like ends up being some of the hardest work and where courage ends up coming in. For me, in particular, with this last set of change where I went from a primary identity and being married to not, and a company I thought I'd work at for a long time to not, I really had to narrow the vision casting window of what I was looking forward toward, because one of the casualties in this most recent change was my imagination for what was possible now that so many things I thought would happen weren't going to. A lot of that imagination being compromised was around fear. So I had to spend some time deconstructing, is this fear real? Is this, say, not real fear? If this is a real fear, is there a plan or a tool I could use to not eliminate it, because it was still going to exist, but maybe fortify myself with something that would allow me to walk toward it and through it so that I could get to learning and growing on the other side of facing it. But the simplest thing to answer your specific question that I did that was really, really helpful in the midst of change this last time around in particular was ask a very, very simple but poignant question. What do I need in this season to become who I'm hoping to become on, again, that very, very small time horizon in the next 90 days?
Yeah.
Right. And so instead of like a 5-year vision, I was just asking like, given the circumstances, the conditions that I understand to exist in my life in real time, what do I need? And I asked it against the five dimensions of health. What do I need for my physical health, my mental health, my emotional health, my relational health, and my spiritual health? And in answering those questions, I tried to find two or three things for each of those dimensions that I knew would definitively help me maintain some momentum toward this version of who I'm hoping to become. And the answers became my daily routine. They became the habits I had to adopt, the circle of people I had to surround myself with, the way I had to live toward a calendar that was a reflection of who I hoped to be in these next 90 days, or created boundaries in a way that would keep other things that would distract me from the things I needed in the season from actually being present. And so that simple question, and by the way, good news, coming, you know, 18 months from, you know, this change having happened in my life, the time horizon that I can think about of what I need ends up being a little bit longer than 90 days. And I can now certainly cast a vision for who I'm hoping to become 5 years from now. Yeah, but I do think that there's something special for any of us who are like having a goal, but not ever addressing if it still has practical application, given the circumstance that you find yourself inside of, sometimes makes that goal irrelevant. And so I've liked the way that now six times in 18 months, I've sat down and had a conversation of what do I need now that I am three more months removed from, or three more months entrenched in the redefinition of who I'm going to be professionally, or what I'm going to have as a pillar of my identity now that that old one is gone. What is this new version of who I am? And the like ability to do it on that frequency makes the goals that I have or the routine that I'm living into applicable, practical, super relevant to what I am trying to work through in real time.
I love it. So, okay, from there, you've had so many different identities. And obviously, you talk a lot about this in the work that you put out into the world. And obviously, we're going to talk about your new book. But so, for example, you have this role previously, let's take it back, right? You have this role at Disney. People are clapping for you. You're getting a lot of external validation, right? And then you move into another role where then you're helping build the Hollis Company. And then you're moving into this personal brand and this identity. And now you're like, right, you're done with your second book. Like, and now you're like train, you're like getting super beefy in the gym. Like you are really transitioning to a lot of different identities. And I think sometimes women in this community that listen to this podcast struggle with, but I work so hard to get there. And now they're scared and telling themselves this story of like, well, I can't make a change because when you start something new, like take it as even, you know, macro counting, right? You start something brand new, you suck at it at the beginning. You don't know what the hell you're doing. And you're comparing yourself to that prior version of you that crushed it at the last thing. So how do you navigate that? And what advice would you give to women that are maybe have gone down a path where they've seen a lot of success and they know that they want to make a change because it doesn't feel aligned anymore, but they're telling themselves like, I'm scared of other people watching me make this change and me not being very good at this. How do you kind of work through that?
Gosh, there's a couple of things in that. So, well, one, let's start with the very last thing you said. Like the worry of not being good at the beginning is a simple one. You're not going to be good at the beginning. Give yourself permission to not be good. It's just going to be a thing that will only become something that you become good at because of your willingness to not be good for as long as it takes to become good. And if you, you know, like if you need evidence from some external source of this being the way to become good, look at literally any person that you admire. I mean, literally any person that you admire, their story is littered with all of these examples of times when they tried something, weren't good, failed publicly, had to take the learning from that failure, apply it to their life, and became better because of the failure, not in spite of it. Period. That is like a simple thing. If you admire a company or a person, trust me, there's failure all over the place. And for me, I'd been very fixed mindset oriented. So I kind of ran from things or avoided things that I wasn't going to be great at. And I didn't have this connection to fulfillment that only happened when you're growing. And so it took me moving into more of a growth mindset or a growth mindset altogether, appreciating that the only way I could grow was by trying things I had not previously done so that in not doing them well, I would learn how to do them better. Mm-hmm. And reframing failure, not as some indictment of me not being good or worthy, but as the price of entry for the acquisition of knowledge that exclusively comes in not getting something right until you do. And so failure is information. Failure is intel. And it's as simple as that. I I wish I could say like, oh, it's easy. It's not easy, because part of what I write about in the book is like this idea of our safe harbor. Like we become so comfortable with what we know that it's hard for us at times to trade off what we need for what we know. And there's a lot of nautical references in the book. I talk about like this decision that you have to make to leave a harbor into the choppiness of the waters, where you will in fact become this version of who you were meant to be. But until you lose sight of the shore that you are leaving, you can't actually cross the ocean. And a lot of times there is almost a romantic notion we have with this place that we've been, and this illusion of control that we believe that what we know in real time will exist forever. And I can tell you that that is not true. I may have been a person who believed in that illusion, but I am witness to the fact that, hey, things that I thought would never happen in my lifetime happened in my lifetime. Good news, I was the beneficiary of them having happened. But any romantic thing that I may have put into the status quo being a thing I could depend on is now gone. And in that, I have freedom from ever putting too much weight into any single thing that might exist in real time. It forces a little bit of gratitude for what exists, because you don't know how long you have or how much time you're going to be with the person that you might love or a situation that you find yourself in. But also, it just acts as this invitation to get on up and move on away. Anytime anything starts to feel too comfortable, if you start to feel like you're not growing or that you're not as connected to that thing that your intuition is begging you to pay attention to, that you know deep down you were put here for.
Yeah, so real. So, okay, let's take your analogy of the ship, right? I mean, you get it tatted on you, like it's all about in your book, like you are all about the ship. Okay, so what about when you get out of the harbor and you see that there's a lot of different directions that you can go? Because some women listening to this are like, Dave, that sounds amazing. But like, where do I take, like, I know I can drive the boat. Maybe they believe in their ability to drive the boat, but they're like, where do I take the boat? Because there's so many options. How do I figure out what I'm passionate about? How do I figure out what I'm excited about if I'm willing to get off the shore? I'm trying to roll with your analogy here, but
I'm down with it, man. I go so hard into it. People could get seasick reading this stinking book. But for me, like, there's this like place where three things overlap, that if I was myself trying to connect most to my purpose on this planet, I would try to spend time answering the questions around these three things, and the hope that in a Venn diagram kind of way, they create a point at which all of them are aligned. The first is passion. You have to be passionate about the thing that you are going to leave the harbor for. You got to be passionate if you're going to get excited about it every single day. If you don't have passion about the thing that you are doing or the thing that you might do next, it is not, in my experience, a thing that you can manufacture or learn. It's hard to acquire passion. You either are passionate or you are not passionate about a thing. And so part of where I went is like, who did I want to be before I became who I've become? Right? I had a nice career. I did a whole bunch of different things. There's a bunch that I have tried for. And yet, who did I want to be before I became who I've become was a question that I had to ask when I found myself at crossroads for change.
Talking about like little boy Dave? Like, or are you talking about teenage Dave? Are you talking about high, like what, when you take it back to who did I want to be before I became who I became? Like what vision of you are you going to in your head?
All right. So I tell the story in the book. I had this like providence serendipity kind of moment where I'm at this place where I'm working at a Hollis company. I still have this like churn inside of like, man, like the impact feels amazing. I know we're doing good work. I also feel like there might be more for me to do with what I might be able to bring to the world. And I happen to be sat on an airplane next to Dan Rather. And Dan Rather, just to give you a sign of how dorky I was, how long it was before I kissed a girl in my lifetime, was my childhood hero. Like, he was who I wanted to be when I was young. I just loved
like
the
posters
news.
Above your bed type of thing.
No, we were not rich enough to afford posters. What are you talking about? But he was just the person that I wanted to be. And I was given 2 hours of his time. He was so generous with it in just like being able to connect with a man who followed his mission and was, because of the work he was able to do, he brought so much to journalism and to his craft. And I just admired him so much. And I got off that airplane and I was like, oh man, I remember 19-year-old me at Pepperdine University, who was the anchor of the news on that local station, or the DJ job that I got at the 2 a.m. time slot where I was a reporter doing this thing that I love so much, I should lean a little bit more into how I might reconnect with that 19-year-old version who knew that that was where his passion was. And as much as like the job that I have now is impossible to explain to my 99-year-old Grandma Lee. She asks all the time, do you have a career still? I'm like, yeah,
she's
I
like,
do.
But she like, wants to give you like $20 when you leave because she's worried.
She's worried I can't, you know, like, are you back on ramen for meals? Like, what's happening here? Like, it's hard to explain what I do because I have a weird job. But the easiest way to explain it, I take experiences of other people, the things that I'm learning in my own journey, I'm pulling them together. And inside of books, inside of podcasting, inside of coaching, I am reporting, thankfully not the news, but reporting something that may be useful in someone else's having a breakthrough or a tool that they might apply to their own life for the progress that they'd hope for. And so that to me, like the first thing is passion. That's a long way of answering, like, how do you find your purpose? First thing is passion. Second thing is that you have to find something that you have skill in, something that you can over time develop into something that I would call mastery. Right. Because if you can develop something that over 10,000 hours of time makes it something that you are really amazing at because you put in the work, you create confidence, you create a sense of self, you create momentum, and you create pride. So you got to find something that you're great at. And here's the thing, like, I believe with every ounce of my being that you, Keish, me, every listener who's listening, that each of us was given a very unique set of gifts that the creator of the universe at the beginning of time identified very specifically for you what you would be and how you might be able to bring your gifts to bear in the world. And that one of one limited edition version of you is something that I think comes with a mandate for each of us to honor the intention of our creator. He created us with intention. She created us with intention. And we have this responsibility to honor that intention. Great. What are you great at? Right. And then the last thing is impact. And so like, if you can find a way to take the things that you have passion for, who do you want to be before you became who you become? What are you good at? What are you spending your time to develop skill-wise into something that you might one day call mastery? And how could you combine that passion and that set of skills to actually affect other people? Right? You were put on this planet for the light that not only you might keep inside of you, but for the light that you would then share with other people. If you can find the converging point where these three circles, passion, mastery, and impact come together, I will argue that you will feel more connected to your purpose, more connected to this opportunity that each of us have to honor the intention of our creator. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
It's so good. Like, you just packaged that up with like a little bow at the end. I loved it. Oh, I loved it. So here's the question. Obviously, health and fitness is such a huge part of your mindset and your ability. I feel like it's such a tool for you to cope with challenges. It is for me too. You and I both did a crazy challenge called 29029 Everesting. And that was the hardest thing that I had ever done physically. We just did it last month. Wanted to die, but so proud at the end because you're like, this is so freaking hard. So can you talk about how you lean into physically hard challenges? Because now you're also, you know, running all the time and you're like answering, you know, questions while you're running. So you're just, your cardiovascular is like top notch. Like, tell us like how that transition has been for you and how important it's been for someone that's listening to this episode right now that while they're doing a workout and they need to like hit that push up again, right? Tell them.
Yeah. So one of the things that I have answered in the question, what do I need in this season for my physical health, is actually something that is physically challenging beyond what I believe I am capable of.
Yeah.
And so 29029, a triathlon that I struggled through, the way that I'm training in real time for a physique competition where I'm actually going to pose with tanning oil on my body with my muscles exposed, terrifying. Like, these are things that I have been putting myself into so that I can reframe what I believe I am actually capable of by pushing myself beyond what I think I can do.
Yeah.
Great example where I don't know, I had an appreciation for how intense and how hard that challenge was going to be before I got there. And in accomplishing it, I was now connected to not only how strong I could be physically, but obviously how strong I now knew myself to be mentally. I felt like, man, I could take on literally anything. Come at me, bro. But also, I came off that mountain, and the week before I went, I was doing a long run that was about 5 or 6 miles, took about an hour's worth of time on a Sunday. The week after, I went out for my long run on that Sunday, and that 29 or 29, it was like 13 times up this mountain, each of those climbs, an hour and 45 minutes of the hardest workout of my entire life, back to back. Just turn right, keep on going up that old hill. I'm now out with my shoes, and the idea of running a quote unquote long run for a single hour's worth of time at flat elevation with nice temperatures, as it turned out, was ridiculous. Like it just, yeah. It seemed silly because I had just had this formative experience that reframed what I now knew myself to be capable of, and doing less than I knew myself to be capable of felt like I was not living into who I'm here to be. And so on that day, I was like, you know what? I'm going to run a half marathon. I'm going to run a neighborhood half marathon. You know why I'm going to? Because I know I can. Because yeah. I know after having just done this 35-hour experience that I can run for 2 hours and 15 minutes on flat ground. And I did it that weekend and 19 consecutive weekends until on the 20th weekend, I ran my first marathon. And I ran that marathon because I knew that I could run a marathon for having done these things on like just, it just fundamentally changed the way I think. Mm-hmm. And part of why physical challenges or moving your body in any way is so important is it's a keystone habit, which is this idea of a habit that has rippling effects that ultimately make other good habits in your life come together. So I'm still wearing my workout shirt when I work out in the morning. It is a trigger, one, to have my body moving in a way that helps me process the things that I'm thinking. But that two, as soon as I come back in, I know that I've just worked out. The likelihood of me making a good choice when it comes to what I'm going to eat or how I'm going to fuel my body, the way that I'm going to drink my water, the way that I am going to do almost anything that is connected to my broader health is just upped because I've had this experience of moving it in a way that reminds me, oh yeah, you're a healthy dude. You do this now. This is who you are. Now you're just going to keep on making a string of good choices that support your pursuit for good health. And then pushing yourself in that physical space, you know, those are the things where I'm getting ready to kick off a 60-day challenge here on Monday. And I'm doing the workouts with the crew of people that have signed up. It is going to leave me the fittest I've ever been in my entire life. I am positive of it, but I also am committing to doing something that is going to show me what I can do over an 8-week period of time that's different than what I've historically done in an 8-week period of time. That when I get through it is going to have me knowing, oh, this is just who I am now. I am this person who does this stuff where it's part weights and part HIIT training and part, and it's going to push me. But that's the point. I want to be pushed so that it reframes what I believe myself to be capable of on the other side.
Boom. That needs to be like a bumper sticker. Just that whole line. Like, oh, so juicy. Girl, I hope you are vibing with this episode and conversation with Dave. I am loving it. But I wanted to make sure that I kept you in the loop because I have a really cool opportunity for you if you yourself want to start your own podcast. Maybe you've been thinking about a podcast for a while, or you've been saying, I'm going to start it next month. And all of a sudden it's been 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years. You just need a little bit more accountability and skin in the game. If so, I've got you. Or maybe you're in the other camp where you've actually started to look up and research how to start a podcast, and then you just get yourself overwhelmed, or you feel like it's not going to be super fun and fulfilling to do it by yourself. Well, girl, I've got your back. We have an introduction course called She Goes Podcasting, which is literally designed for you. It takes you from idea or even like gut feeling of wanting to start a podcast to actually launching in 4 weeks. And what is so cool about this course is it's unlike any other course out there because not only is it self-paced in that you can actually go through the content if you're super busy and you're trying to navigate all the things, it's designed for you. But we also have this built-in hype squad because in between each phase's content, we do group Zoom calls that you get to jump on live. You can ask me questions. I'm there to support you. And then you're also around all of these other women that are navigating, you know, launching a podcast for the first time too. So it just gives you a lot more friendship and connection and just makes the process so much more enjoyable. And then what's cool is after we actually launch your podcast, we move you into our She Goes Podcasting graduate group where you not only get lifetime access to the content as we continue to evolve it, but you get plugged in with this whole ecosystem of all of the other women that have launched their podcast through our course. So again, more collaboration and friendship opportunities as you go. So if you are interested, we do this course every month. So regardless of the time that you're listening into this podcast, reach out via text so I can give you some more details and hear more about your idea. Text me podcast course to 512-548-2728. Again, podcast course to 512-548-2728. If you're on my pump up text list, it's the same number. So text me there. I'll keep you in the loop of all the details and when our next course is open for registration. Without further ado, let's jump back in. Okay. So from that, I want to talk about your book and writing the book, but I also want to hear about the really crappy part of writing a book. Cause everybody's like, "Woo! I got my book. I'm doing my book tour. Like these are all the principles in my book." But like, can you talk to us for anyone that's listening that wants to write a book about how hard it actually is to write a book before we talk about all the cool stuff in the book? Like, how do you get your mindset in check? Like, how does that actually feel when you don't want to write and you've got, you know, timelines and like things that you need to hit in terms of like the amount of words on the page and all that stuff? Like, I want to talk about how it actually felt and what came up for you as you were kind of exposing this other version of you through the book.
Yeah. In a crazy way, my book deadline was a massive gift in a really hard season because there is catharsis in getting to create in any kind of way, but certainly in writing, having to sit and connect in what for me was a super emotional time with how my experience might be something that other people can see themselves in some of the stories, but that also might encourage or challenge or lift somebody up who needs it on that day. And so I felt grateful that, oh man, I have this deadline. There were times, of course, where I did not feel like writing and I was very intentional in spending a handful of months not touching the work while I was really processing some of the hardest moments of divorce. I was more on a rock in nature, spending time in conversation with God or journaling myself. But really, a lot of what ended up coming out of that time in healing were the notes or the thoughts or the sermons I listened to or the insights that I took from conversations with some of the coolest people on earth that happened to also be friends that would allow me now to say, oh, this was something that really helped me in my journey where struggle was present in its most kind of darkest and brightest form at that same time. And maybe I can, in sharing a little bit of what helped me get through it, help other people get through it as well. When it comes to writing, though, I have a process and everyone has like another own process. But my process is like first I create an outline. The outline is driven primarily by the stories that I think I want to tell. So I make a list of all the stories I could tell that are supporting the theme of whatever the book ends up being. And for me, on the days when I have a hard time writing, I tend to then turn to a story because I can, for the most part, write a story. It's harder sometimes to step away from sharing a past experience and trying to teach something that you have learned either through life, through a book, through a conversation, whatever it might be. But for me, it's just been a word count game when I have a deadline. And so I'll set a target of how many words I need to hit every single day. And I will sit in front of that stinking computer, usually until that word count is hit. The first, my books are, you know, this book ends up being a little bit longer, but the deadline number of words that you're supposed to hit in a book that's my genre is about 60,000. The first 20,000 words are easier to write. Because you're excited about the process. You're telling all of your favorite stories first. Yay, this is going to be rad. And then you hit the 20,000 word mark and you start to doubt you have enough good stories left to actually finish the book. And then your self-doubt rears its head and you wonder if you're even worthy of being an author in the first place. And if you finish, if anyone's actually going to read it, when they do, if they're going to think it's garbage. And that like 20,000 to 40,000 threshold is hard. But then you hit 40 and you're like, this is the home stretch, right? I got to get to a conclusion. I got to come back and tell a little bit more detail in a couple of these places. But I tried to have the book be a combination of storytelling, some very practical frameworks that I have worked through in my own life to try and become and continue to become. I define myself in three words as a work in progress, a thing I will be for the rest of time. And so these are the frameworks that I have applied in my own life as this work in progress that I am. And then a bunch of active learning prompts where at the end of each chapter, there is what's called a logbook that asks you to, all right, pull out your journal, pull out your notebook. Now do this exercise, write, you know, for 10 minutes about this thing, just to see if I might be able to provoke, after having story told or shown a framework, someone who's reading the book to do a little bit of the work. And that kind of stuff, that stuff gets exciting for me as I'm trying to finish a book, because you usually save that stuff for the end. So Anyway, writing, if you love to write, there's certainly still going to be days where it's stinking hard, where you don't feel as motivated. And there were plenty of times, you know, as much as I was trying to write every day, the 1500 words or whatever it was I'd give myself as a target, there were days where I was like sitting there, nothing's coming. And inspired by a song that I heard. I'd have a moment where I'd see something in nature, sitting on the rock after my run, having a conversation with God. And all of a sudden I was like, oh man, that's what I can write about today. And I come back like, okay, wasn't a writing session that happened at 6 a.m. It's now going to be a writing session that happens at 11. Great. I mean, part of the fun of having a job as weird as mine is I get to kind of shuffle the schedule as is necessary. So ended up working out.
I love that. So, okay. So you vision, I kind of want to tap into your brain on how this works for you. So you've got this idea of like this book that you want to write, and you tap into kind of the vision of like the impact that it will make and whatever that is. How do you kind of support yourself when you've got a big distance from where you are now to where you want to go? So this doesn't even have to be in your book, right? Maybe for you to go be oiled up, covered in tanning stuff, like flexing your muscles. Like you look at where you are now and where you want to go, and you're like, that's a pretty big distance. A lot of times I feel like some women that listen into this podcast get stuck because that distance feels far, because they are ambitious go-getters and they've got these big dreams. So how do you actually mentally work through that to support yourself when you know that you've got a big, big chunk of time before you get where you want to go?
The first thing, whoever said this, smart person, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? Like if you are overwhelmed by the audacity of your dream, great, you're dreaming big, but also you don't need to accomplish your entire goal on the first day. So if you are looking to build scale a company from 5 people to 100, or you're on a weight loss journey, you want to lose 100 pounds, you're going to build it one person at a time as you're hiring, or one pound at a time as you're working through your health journey. And all you have to really work on then is that like small incremental baby step that ultimately gets you closer to that goal overall. I also, when I think about even just like the frame of the book, like it starts with, you said it, but it's, I think, important just to come back to it. Like, you have to know where you're going. And wow, that's what a evolved idea that is. No, it's actually a thing that I don't know that we give enough time to, being hyper self-aware, just like brutally honest, radically candid with ourselves. Where are we? Where are we really? What are the things that are working? More importantly, what are the things that are not working or not going to be supportive of this place that we'd like to go? And becoming comfortable with, oh, these are the habits that need to change, the coping mechanisms I need to address, the circle of people I have to upgrade or change, the calendar I have to get in line, the boundaries I have to set, all of those things. Like if you can really become as self-aware as you possibly can of where you actually are, now you can give yourself a fighting chance to get to where you want to go. So the second part ends up being casting a vision for where you want to go. And I mean, like, this has got to be a like specific, in the weeds, detailed vision that runs like a movie in your head version of where you want to try and get to. And if you in any way are struggling to get specific, or you're having any issue in any way of casting as vivid a version of this movie playing that you'd like to play in your head, I know for me, right, I mentioned like my imagination was a casualty of change in a way that didn't allow me to cast vision out for a long, long way. And the thing that I had to do to like reignite or jumpstart my imagination was become really comfortable owning and honoring my fear. And so if you don't have a relationship with your fear, or you don't like setting aside time to sit with yourself to understand your thoughts, you're normal. But you're also likely to not create the kind of imagination that you're necessarily going to need to have as vivid a vision of where you're going to go. So do that hard work of asking, like, what are you afraid of? What is it that doesn't allow your imagination to dream as big or as vibrantly as you'd hope? And invite that fear to sit at a table with you. Be an observer. And in doing so, for me, it's crazy. I don't like being afraid, But I have come to see fear as an invitation as opposed to a threat. And so when I become afraid of something, more often than not, I'm like, I got to go do this now. Like, I know that this is something I'm being drawn toward. I haven't done it before. I'm likely to not be good at it as we talk, but guess what? I got to go do it. So create a relationship with your fear so you can have the imagination for what ends up coming next. And once you have that deep sense of where you are, honest, candid, real sense of where you are and a very vivid vision of where you want to go, then you get to get into the practical blocking and tackling of what's going to take. And the what's it going to take ends up being, again, like the habits, the calendar, the circle of people, the way you're consuming things, the like way you're spending your time, all of that, and build what's going to take. You can ask the question that I did. What are you going to need in this season to get 30 days closer, 90 days closer? You can do it by just looking at how you're approaching your daily routine or how you're setting up habits that support who you'd hope to become. I in the book, I talk about like one of the most important questions that I had to ask myself in this or any season is, how do I feel about myself when I'm by myself? How do I feel about myself when I'm by myself? And so for you as a listener, if you ask that question and there's any part of you that doesn't feel great, I would encourage you to do a little bit of an inventory of where you think that feeling of not feeling great comes from. For me, I know for sure, having done a lot of backwards looking, when did I feel stuck? When was I getting in my own way? Every single time I had a season of stuck, there was a variable that was present that now has me on the lookout for it so that I can avoid it in attempting to create the best years of my life. And that was a lack of integrity, not like honesty necessarily. I mean, I knew that I was placed here with intention, that I had a reason for being here, that I've been given these gifts, that I should, because of that, show up in a certain way. But I knew in the privacy of my own head, as my head's hitting the pillow at the end of the day, that I hadn't actually shown up in a way that was consistent with or aligned with who a person either suggests that they are or knows themselves to be capable of or would need to be if they are going to make it to the vision that they have cast. And so part of understanding what it's going to take is this pursuit of creating integrity so that in having created it, every day, the only thing you can control are the 24 hours that sit in front of us. You can't control what happens next. You can't change what's already happened. You can only control how you show up today. And in creating integrity between who you know you'd have to become the person you were suggesting in your vision, now you're engineering that future to actually come to be. And if you don't, right? If you know you could, yep, I could be that person, but I'm afraid. I could be that person, but I'll be judged. I could be that person, but I'll fail. That space that exists, the dissonance between who you could be and who you show up as, that's where shame lives, where guilt lives, where lack of confidence lives, where lack of motivation lives. And that gap has become a big part of my why. My why is to close that gap. I want to try and eliminate any space that might exist between who I know God created me to be, put me on this planet to be, and how I show up today in a way that honors that. And on the days when I do, when there is complete alignment, I sleep well. I am proud of myself. I have confidence in myself. The voice in my head is like, you've got this, brother. Keep going. And the days that I don't, I feel shame. And I am less motivated and I am harder on myself. I don't give myself any grace. And so I want to encourage you, right? Have the awareness of where you are. Cast the vision for where you want to go and then work every day to maintain integrity between who you'd have to be on that day to have the vision of who you'd hope to become actually show up.
Wow. That's fire. Do you ever stop for a second? And I'm sure that you do, but like stop for a second and think of the person that you were, say even 2.5 years ago. And you are like a drastically, I'm not in your brain, so you're the one that actually knows, but like, it's crazy how far you've come, right? You just look back and you're like, damn, I came a really far away.
Here's the thing, like when someone says like, man, I don't recognize you, like, thank you. What a kind compliment. Yeah. It's a wild thing. I had thrown out at the end of 2019, I was just transitioning out of the day-to-day at the Hollis Company into what would be this first time of being an author and a coach for the first time and a handful of other things. I was nervous. The word that I describe in the book is this idea of being unmoored, because I was for the first time in this next version of life, I was leaving a harbor of safety and security and having been a person that was behind the scenes more working on how you scale a business, to becoming more of an out front face of the business. And I can see like the cover of my last book or the pictures that were happening around that time, the kind of like the fear and the doubts that not having yet become comfortable with the motion of the ocean, as it were, had me feeling. What's also crazy is in that kind of same season, end of 19, we're at a holiday party and I throw out this audacious claim that I am about to have the best year of my life. Like I am going to have 2020 is going to be the best year for me ever. If I in any way introduced the crap that we all had to go through in 2020, I do apologize for bringing it on. But I made this bold declaration that I'd save my best year ever for my 45th year. It's going to be this amazing year. And what I didn't appreciate against this backdrop of like, man, you've changed so much, is that I was not a person who was going to get a say in the conditions through which my best year would show up, right? Like I do not want to go through 2020 again. It was by a factor of 100, the hardest year of my entire life. And yet I became who I've become and am proud of myself and healthy and strong and closer to God and my kids and all of the things that will be setting me up for the legacy of the rest of my life, not in spite of having to go through those things, but because of having to go through those things. And so as much as, again, like change is a thing that we run from at times, and certainly we choose change, that we have to kind of work through what it means to now go into this new space. Change chooses us. Oh, something happens, diagnosis, end of relationship. We didn't see something coming and all of a sudden here it is. Those things can be one of two things, right? There's like post-traumatic stress and there's also post-traumatic growth. And I know I've been the beneficiary of post-traumatic growth, like all of my growth. I mean, I've been on a growth journey for about 5 years and I feel even more different than that person who was standing on stage selling movies at the Walt Disney Company. But I even just look at the last handful of years and I'm like, man, what a cool thing to say. I don't recognize myself in the way that working through hard stuff has actually produced some of the strongest parts of me and will at the end of my life. I think I'll look back at 2020 and be like, man, that was a year that has helped define who I've become. And, you know, in a weird way, I can hold just a ton of gratitude for all of what has happened, having happened, even as I don't want to necessarily go through it again.
Oh, it's such a gift to people too, because you're talking about year 45 and so many people have this arbitrary milestone of like, I need to be at this certain place in my career, in my relationship with my kid, like at a certain, like society created these standards of like, ooh, 45. Like when I turned 30, I was like, I remember when I thought 30 was old. Like, 30 is not old. I'm like basically an infant. I'm like a toddler. But to that, I do want to just give the opportunity for someone listening to this podcast right now that is in the hard season, right? They're in like, how you probably felt right after the divorce when you're like, what am I doing with my career? What does this actually look like? What would you tell that woman listening in that's just like, Dave, this is so damn hard right now. Like, I don't know what to do. What little nugget would you give to her?
Well, I would encourage that person, one, to just keep moving forward. I don't want to say, because I really didn't like to hear, it's going to get better. Trust me, it's going to get better. I was like, you know what? You can take your, it's going to get better and jam it, my friend. but I did appreciate that. Oh, if I can keep walking forward, moving forward, even on the days where, like I said, a Cal Ripken-esque kind of crying every day streak at one point. And I like, it was just part of the way that you process grief. Right. But like giving myself a ton of grace was a big part of it. There were days where I felt like I could actually get up and be super productive. And there were days where I was like, all right, I got up and now I'm going back down and that's just going to be fine. We're going to call it Thursday. I'll see you on Friday. Thank you very much. Yeah. Right. But for me, I think maybe one of the most important things was the idea of faith. And I don't mean necessarily religious faith, though I am a person who has religious faith and certainly there's this verse I use in the book, James 4:8, when you draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. I was the beneficiary of being closer to God than I've ever been because I needed God more than I'd ever needed him. But beyond like religious faith, I think it was maybe a byproduct of how I felt with God, but I became a believer that the things that I needed to get me through the journey would show up when I needed them. So I just started looking for them because of that belief, because of that faith. And when I went out looking for them, I found them. And so it was, you know, just, and it was, by the way, it was like not huge things. It was just like these little things that were just like this whisper of, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You're going to get through this. I had a pastor send me the same text, 11 of the most perfect words that I needed in a way that I didn't even know, for 8 weeks in a row, same text every day. What small piece of sadness can I hold for you today? Ooh, I needed that so badly, because it wasn't even so much like, oh, I'm going to try and convince you it's going to get better. I'm going to try and in some ways tell you not to feel what you're feeling. I want to honor that you're feeling what you are, but be in solidarity with you. You're not alone. Like, how can I just hold a little tiny piece of it for you? Or I ran a ton. I mean, like I ran 200 miles those first couple months in each of the first couple months. I mean, I ran. But there were things that happened in the run, whether it was listening to a song or a sermon, that were just like this like little whisper, this promise, like, you are going to get through this. On one of the runs, I ran into my neighbor who had just moved into town, who'd become a barbecue buddy, a friend, and a therapist in some respects. I was introduced from a therapist I'd been going to this person who really specialized in identity. And that identity work was just massive in transforming the way I thought of who I am now that I wasn't who I'd been. And I could just go on and on. There were just like these little tiny things that would show up, but believing that they would had me looking for them expectantly. And the little tiny thing that I needed on a certain day would be there because I was looking for it, like it was like an appointment that had already shown up on my calendar. And so I would just encourage someone who's going through a hard time, believe that you will get a little moment of peace or grace or light at some point each day, and then just look for it. And that tiny miracle, little baby miracle, will be there as this reminder that it's a journey and you're going to get through it. I also think too, because like I hated the idea at the time that that this was going to be something that I would be able to in time appreciate as having been for me and not happening to me. Like, it just felt trite. When I was in the midst of pain, I was like, you know what? You can keep your, there's going to be a good lesson. Or you're going to grow out of this. But here I am, right? Like, on the other side of the hardest things I've been through, I have such an appreciation that I am right where I am supposed to be. And I know that I am right where I'm supposed to be today when I'm found, but that I'm right where I'm supposed to be because of the season when I was lost. And I'm gonna cry about this, but there's like, for someone who feels lost, I promise you, as much as I just said, I don't want to be the person that tries to convince you of it, that that your season of loss will help you become found. And if you can find someone who has experienced what you're experiencing and it's just a little further along the journey, they may in fact be able to allow you to, what I've called, borrow belief that what has happened for them can happen for you. And I had a handful of people who, because they were a little further along their journey in divorce, when I felt like there must be something wrong with me for feeling these things, those people were able to normalize the feelings in a way that just said, like, number one, you're seen. And also, this struggle is super normal. And here is something that I used at this point in the journey that was helpful, that maybe acts as something of a time machine to expedite some of how you're processing this grief. And that was a gift. So owning where you are in the struggle, bringing that into the light so that you can feel less alone by other people who of course are going to relate to the humanity that is that struggle, that maybe makes you feel normal and not indict you in any way for not being good or strong enough to handle the thing that you're going through. But that also in that community maybe gives you an opportunity for a tip or a trick that helps somebody else when they found themselves in the spot that you're in.
And I imagine if you wouldn't have been brave enough to talk about it, if you wouldn't have called up Heidi and Ben, come be on my podcast. What that would have, like, obviously, you know, Steve Jobs has the quote that says you can only connect the dots looking backwards. And it's like, what a brave thing to do, where you just like sob on the couch next to basically a stranger that ends up becoming such an important person in your life. Like, it's just, it's so cool. And I think it's a really good reminder for people that are in tough seasons of not like the whole idea, you'll get through it and come on the other side, but like look for opportunities and share about it, so you don't have to suffer alone. I just love that aspect of your story. And obviously you're going to talk a lot about that in the book. So tell us, what's your favorite thing that you're excited about for the book? Where can we find the book? It comes out in October. So like, give us the rundown of the book.
Yeah. I mean, so it's called Built Through Courage. It comes out October 26th. I'm excited about everything. And what I think I've loved so far from the handful of people who've been able to read early copies, not one single thing stands out as what they are loving the most.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that in the collection of stories, in the, you know, again, the frameworks and the learning prompts, that this is going to meet someone right where they are with the thing that they really need for breakthrough, for progress, for momentum, for vision casting, whatever it ends up being. And that hopefully in some of what feels vulnerable in having bared my soul in some respects, that you'll see yourself in some of my stories, and it might normalize the way that struggle is just a reflection of our humanity, and that we're all doing every single thing we can as best we can. We're going to have good and bad days. It's a super nonlinear process, but I hope the book is encouraging, and that in some ways is a resource that helps you get to where you're meant to be, that you might better honor the intention of your creator because of some of the things that are inside of it. If you end up pre-ordering the book, I will say there's a cool community that I've created inside of a private Facebook group that you can, as a part of the pre-order, get immediate access to. There's 13 weeks of free coaching in there, 6,500 like-minded people that are trying to live their best life where they are every day encouraging each other. You get a couple of written, like, super rad courses, one about finding your purpose and another about mindset and resilience. But my hope was like, hey, if you want to spend 15 or 20 of your hard-earned dollars, could I give you $500 worth of value? If you head over to MrDaveHollis.com/book, you can jump on in. The crew is waiting for you. We would love to have you join and be part of our every Monday night coaching and all the other goodies that are there.
Amazing. And I just personally love books that are kind of like tapas, right? So like, it's like stories where it's just like, you're going to get the whole vibe and everybody's going to connect to different parts of it. I'm so excited for everybody to get their hands on this book. Obviously go pre-order it and just know that you're going to have it on your doorstep right when it comes out and get all of these bonuses. I love it. Dave, thank you for sharing your heart with the world and for how you show up. Obviously as just a consumer of your content and someone who has admired you from afar from the last 300 episodes since I last talked to you, it's amazing to see your growth. You're a testimony of what's possible for other people and how you show up in the world. So thank you for being who you are. I appreciate you.
Oh my goodness. You are so sweet. Thank you so much. I just would encourage anyone who has taken anything away from this, you are 90% more likely to retain something that you learned today if you share it with someone else. So if there is a single thing that I could ask today, I hope that you will shine some of the light that I hope you received to someone else who may desperately need a little bit of this light. And if you share it on social, tag me, because I want to be able to thank you personally with a quick DM. So I appreciate y'all for letting me talk in your ear today. And thanks, Gosh, for having me back. I love being a repeat guest, and I appreciate your words so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening in. If you love this episode, it would mean so much to me if you shared it with a girlfriend. Like, send it to her right now or post it on social media and tag me so I can personally thank you for helping me get the message out. I am so freaking grateful to be on this journey with you, girl. So until next time, I'll talk to you soon.